This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee.
The first ever Grand Prix of Indianapolis is about to start. Oh, the pole sitter doesn't get going. Oh!
There's not a worse place to stall than at the start of a race. I hope they're okay.
On to the backstretch. Final time. A trophy at Indianapolis. Tantalizingly close. Will the fuel hold up? One more heavy braking passing area to go for Castroneves. It's turn 12 out of the short chute of 1 and 2 on the oval. Still under power is Pagenaud. Here they come. Is he slowing down? Trying to milk it, trying to nurse it. To the final corner with the checkered flag in the air. It's going to work. The inaugural Grand Prix of Indianapolis to Simon Pagenaud.
Pace car 55 miles an hour. They come to speed. The green flag waves the Brickyard 400. He is underway in the first three rows, side by side to turn one.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jeff Gordon, oh, he's going to go around him. He's taking the inside. They touch. He's got the lead. The lead going into turn two. Indeed, they did touch. A little high coming into two. Irwin's a little lower. But now Jeff with about five car lengths off. And the fans once again on their feet.
What's happened to Ernie Irvin as they go to three?
Irvin down to the inside. He's away out of the pack.
Flat tire.
Nothing wrong with the car. And he's slowing down. So Brett Bodine's in second. Bill Elliott in third. Rusty Wallace in fourth. And Dale Earnhardt in fifth.
You don't suppose he's singing back home again in Indiana, do you? Jeff Gordon off turn four. He's just got the one turn to negotiate, to fight off everybody. The crowd roaring. They're on the feet to call the finish of the Brickyard 400. Here's Mike Doyle.
Brett Bodine closes in, but the youngest driver in the field shall lead them home. Jeff Gordon of Pittsboro, Indiana, upholds the honor of the Hoosier State and wins the inaugural Brickyard 400 for his second career Winston Cup victory.
A race weekend in Indianapolis is pretty much here for IndyCar. After one race in the last 9.5 months, this begins a stretch of 5 races in 3 weeks. NASCAR is at about the midpoint of their season. Formula One is getting started. IMSA is back at it Saturday night in Daytona, and so much more to talk about on the program. There has been news throughout the day. Today, we'll get into that. Marty Snyder from NBC, who will be on all of the broadcasts from IMS this weekend, the IndyCar race, the Xfinity race, and the Cup race. He'll join us coming up in about 45 minutes. Don't forget Donald Davidson at 8 o'clock. We have some more classic audio for you tonight with Donald and your chance to talk history of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway with your phone calls and tweets after 8 o'clock tonight. There's some trivia for you. People might not have remembered that Mike Joy did anchor the very first Brickyard on radio, courtesy of IMS Radio, before courtesy of ABC Television, with the first Grand Prix of Indianapolis in 2004 with Alan Bestwick. I think I was spotting for Bob Lamy in 94 at the Brickyard. It's a little fuzzy through the years, but I remember meeting Mike Joy and being around pre-race, so I must have been helping out Bob in some fashion for the race that year. I'm Kevin Lee. Brad Huber is in our Indianapolis studios. Kurt Cavan is with us this evening. I have been knee-deep in sports car prep all day. I'm up to hour 22 of this January's Rolex 24. You know, you always try to watch the most recent race at the track that you're going to be broadcasting from or about. And this one's a little longer than most, so that's taken a little time and lots of prep and lots of Zoom calls. So I'm going to lean on you for breaking down what to expect in this event. Well, we do have some other notes. Another Indy 500 update, and the Top Gun saga continues. We'll tell you the latest on that and much more coming up. And I think, Kurt, we'll start with heat. I greatly will miss being outside for the event this weekend, but as I went outside for just a few minutes today, I'm thinking more and more the air-conditioned booth is going to be the place for me to be this weekend, and the couch, listening on the radio or watching on television, is the place for everyone else.
I think so, too, and obviously, from an IndyCar standpoint, being on NBC this weekend is massively important, so even if you can't be around your television, make sure it's turned on noon on Sunday or noon on Saturday, because it's important from a rating standpoint. And I think it'll be a good show. Forgive me though, for just a little bit. It comes up this time every year when we talk about that first Brickyard 400 and all the cool things that went with it. It just kind of reminded me, listening to that call, that was race win number two for Jeff. And he went on to win 91 additional cup races. I mean, that's phenomenal. And, you know, he stands, what, third on the all-time list. And just a remarkable career for Jeff. I knew Jeff at a very early age and you know, had the pleasure of getting to know him, watching him develop both as a driver and as a man. And what a special race that was, that first Brickyard. There was not much like it in my career, like that first Brickyard. And I think most people who were there will say the same thing.
Did everyone that was paying attention know by the summer of 94, before this win, that Gordon was destined for greatness? Or was it still fairly uncertain what he was?
So I don't think it certainly those that were paying attention knew what we were seeing, because we had watched it, particularly in this market, had watched Jeff in the USAC races at such a young age, and, you know, on dirt and on pavement, and he just won all the big races in USAC, it seemed like. And so that wasn't a surprise. He had done well in the Busch Series, and then to have won at Charlotte earlier in the year was certainly eye-popping. I remember, though, being at Daytona so that would have been 93, and he won one of the twin 125s, and I had told a friend of mine who's kind of a big shot now in NASCAR, and I said, "You got to watch this Gordon kid." And he said, "You mean Robbie Gordon?" And I was like, no, this kid named Jeff, he's in the 24 car. And so, no, maybe by summertime, people had started to figure out, obviously he was with Rick Hendrick's team, but generally speaking, he was still a big surprise. I remember, and I've said on this show before, there are two moments in my coverage of Indianapolis Motor Speedway events when, over the car noise and over the sound of the TV broadcast or the radio broadcast that I was listening to, I could physically hear the crowd roar. One of them was in the Brickyard 400 when Jeff took the lead over Ernie Irvin, and the second one was Danica Patrick taking the lead in the 05 Indy 500. And so that's such a magical moment. I know I was, you know, a little biased because I was close with Jeff, but, you know, in the annals of history, that was a big moment, not only for NASCAR and IMS, but all those in the NASCAR world.
Oh, we've discussed this before many times. We won't go too much into it, but yeah, just from NASCAR's perspective, not Indianapolis, but it is a seminal moment. It might be the most important moment in the modern era of NASCAR. Some would argue that. And I ask you that question about Gordon kind of to get your sense from the national perspective. I was not immersed in the racing scene at that time. I was still working at a little radio station in Newcastle. And my recollection was we, the general sporting public in Indianapolis and Indiana, were not surprised that Gordon won the race. I remember a huge amount of hype and how much of a focus of attention he was going into that race before he had won. He was one of the favorites that we had. I don't know if, you know, nationally in NASCAR he was seen quite that much, but I suspect he was by those that had an idea. So we'll talk more NASCAR coming up in a little bit. Let's go back to Heat, because I think it is more of a storyline for IndyCar this weekend, because the aero screen is still very early on. And this is going to be very different than Texas, right?
It will be. It's a different kind of, you know, it's a similar kind of heat and humidity combination. The road course, you know, you obviously you don't generate as much air. You're exerting more effort as a driver, left and right, and in the twisty part of the racetrack. One thing in favor, perhaps, is that this first practice tomorrow at 11:30, and then the race itself at noon, still early enough in the day to not be in that 4 o'clock, you know, sauna that the racetrack becomes. You know how it is in the summertime. The later you're going to race, the more heat build up, the more humidity build up. You know, the NASCAR race would be the one on Sunday in particular. I guess the Xfinity race is at a similar time, but that green flag on the NASCAR Cup race is going to be like, you know, 4:15, 4:20, something like that, and it is going to be hot. And so IndyCar may catch a little bit of a break with a noon start. It'll still be warm. There's no question about it. But perhaps, you know, 1:30 when the checkered flies, or 1:40, it'll be at least not as hot as it could be later in the afternoon.
And I think what also helps is the warm-up on Saturday morning is at 9 a.m. That's going to be okay. So it's not going to be like Texas, where they've been, the crew guys especially, have been outside all day long. But it's also different than Texas in that a road course race is more physical. Generally speaking, an oval race, and you especially get the breeze, it's the cautions that are the hardest part, but you're really getting after it. Now, I suspect Indianapolis with the long front stretch at least gets you a little bit of a breeze, so not quite as difficult as maybe some others. You know, I've talked with a lot of the IMSA guys, and they're not super concerned about Daytona because they have some time to rest and some time to relax a little bit. They're more concerned about Sebring. Running Sebring in the summertime in 2 weeks. I know it's an evening race. This weekend it's 6, and I think it's similar for Sebring, but it's still awfully hot in Florida up until 8 or 9 o'clock when that race is going to be over. So it's going to be one to watch. I saw Marshall Pruitt wrote today on racer.com that IndyCar has made one key change in the aeroscreen rules following Texas to manage driver cooling. Drivers are required to run with the helmet cooling hose attached at all times, which removes the previous option to drive without the holes in place. And they've also given teams permission to use the modified noses with twin nostrils, which directs air into the front of the chassis toward each driver's legs. I don't know if they've got a little screen to keep the debris out of going through those hoses that we talked about with who was that we talked with?
Zach Veach was who we talked to,
but I had heard that already secondhand from other drivers. So I think that was an issue for some, not as many marbles that you're going to see on a road course. So I don't think that's likely to be much of an issue in that one. So just some stuff to keep up with. Okay. This new fledgling team is getting a lot of airtime and a lot of story this week. Here's the latest on Top Gun Racing from Marshall Pruitt of racer.com. So Marshall reported a few days ago that they were going to delay their debut for the Indy 500. And then I noticed the Facebook post from the owners that saying, no, our plans are still fully in place. So Marshall has written something today. Top Gun Racing co-owner Gary Trout says the team he's formed with Bill Throckmorton has changed its plans to delay their NTT IndyCar Series debut with RC Enerson and will now attempt to run as many as 3 races in 2020. The reversal comes days after Trout took to social media to declare the team would not, as previously announced, partake in August 500. So I didn't see that part. I only saw that, we're still in. So maybe there was a post earlier on, which would leave a reporter to think that it's not going to happen. But they've obviously changed their mind to some extent. Have you read this story?
I have.
Okay, so I'll let you kind of finish up with some of the details and some of the challenges that they're going to be facing and what's in store. And then maybe just a guess is what might happen.
Well, I'm not going to guess what happened. I guess I have hunches.
No, I will. I'll guess. I'll do the guessing for you.
You alluded to some of them last night, but they're going to run 3 races. At least the plan is to run the Indy 500, the October 3rd road race at IMS, and then run the season finale in St. Pete. They like the number 3 because 3 races, probably for a variety of reasons, but that also keeps RC Enerson's rookie status in play for 2021. Which, by the way, feels like RC's been building toward this for like 6 years. So at some point, yeah, he needs to be a rookie.
But he's still only like 22 years old or something, though.
I know. It's just funny because we've been talking about him for a while. I'm ready to see him race. And so he ran at Mid-Ohio for Carlin. So three races, the Indy 500 being the first one. Obviously, you know, the success or the limited success, maybe we'll call it, at Indianapolis could determine, you know, how they operate for the last two races. You know, if they were to have a poor month, that might impact that. But participating in the 500 would be huge for those guys. Obviously, both individuals and their whole team structure has been Indianapolis based, and certainly have pointed toward this for a long time. So good for them. We'll see how it shakes out. And obviously the Indy 500 will help really give them a direction based on how well they do in that, I started to say the month of May, but the month of May and August. So that'll be good.
So Trout says they want to do it on their own. They don't want to partner with another team. However, they have a transporter, and that's it. I think they have some options on a shop, but they don't have a car. They don't have an engine lease. That just seems to me. Now, I think they can get a car, but can they get it prepared and do the things that they want to do to qualify for the race? That is very likely to have 35. If this comes to fruition, I think we're talking very possibly about 36, maybe even 37, but I'd stick to probably more likely 35 or 36. So I think that's a tall task. And in Marshall's story, it does say we have had some relatively serious talks with one team about going down that path. And my best guess there is, okay, what one team that planned on running a car this year is not running a car? It's the second Carlin entry. So that would be one. And I also know that they have worked with R.C. Enerson before and liked him. He did some testing for them last year. Was his race was with them, right?
That's correct.
The Mid-Ohio race? Yeah. And then before that, he did races with Coyne. So I think they feel confident in the driver side of things, and they would likely have some personnel that they could help get off the ground and get going. So to me, that would be the best chance if they really want to be on the grid this year. But maybe they can do it. I don't know their internal workings, and I don't know the people behind the scenes that we haven't heard about so forth. So best of luck to them. I hope this happens. Now, as to what is going on with Carlin, we mentioned a couple of days ago when the entry list came out that they were not on the entry list, and wondered, okay, are we going to see them in that second entry at all this year? I think we'll see them in the Indy 500 with a second entry when you've got the equipment, and I think there will be enough interest in that, but I can't swear to that. So Nathan Brown of the Indianapolis Star went to the team asking for a comment, and you can kind of – they do things a little differently than U.S.-based teams do. I think they've been more in the Formula One world in the ladder series where it's your business when we tell you about it. You're not in the need-to-know information business, and that's been the case a lot of times. They've been very secretive about a lot of things over the years, of things that don't seem to be things that you'd need to keep totally a secret. So the statement from a team spokesperson was, we will not be commenting on future races at this time, and we'll update the public on the situation as the information is available. So they're right to do that. I understand that. It's not a big deal, but just interesting how U.S.-based teams probably are a little more forthcoming on that information. So that's where we stand on that front. You know, I think we have to mention the news of the day in Indianapolis. I know it's a sports show, but we also live life. And the reality is sports are determined on what's happening with COVID-19, right? So that's sure. Determining whether we have sports or not. And today the Indianapolis mayor announced that it will become mandatory a week from, is it either today or tomorrow, that everyone in Marion County, the Indianapolis County, will wear masks when they're indoors publicly. So obviously you can do what you want in your home, or if you're outside and don't have the ability to socially distance. So that's pretty vague there. So I think mostly we're talking about indoors. And this doesn't necessarily impact the August 23rd Indianapolis 500. That is a long way away. So, you know, I've kind of kicked this around verbally on the air. And I don't know if this is going to be what fixes everything. But in some ways, you know, my thought would be worth a try. And I want to do what we need to do to continue to work, all of us. You know, I understand the reluctance and the hesitance to this and the uncertainty, because part of the problem is that in February and March, the experts were telling us you don't need to wear a mask unless you work in a hospital or something like that. So those that really don't want to wear a mask can go back to that and say, wait a minute, you're the smart people. You said I don't need to wear a mask. But there's new information around. And, you know, and I'll say this. I still think it's more dangerous to be inside at a bar with 100 kids than it is for anything else we're doing right now. But here's my bottom line in all of this. This is why I think this is a good thing, because I think it increases the chances of the Indianapolis 500 running in the fashion that has been laid out.
I agree. And ultimately, you know, the mask, while not my favorite thing to do, is not, if that's the biggest ask I've got to make or follow through with, that's easy. I need sporting events to return to normalcy, or at least to consistent action, because, I mean, full disclosure, you and I are financially supported by sporting events, so we need them to happen.
That's
I'll
correct.
Wear a mask, and I think I'd like everybody else to.
You know, I understand maybe I don't understand, but the argument is, well, it's my constitutional right not to wear a mask. I guess the question then would be, well, what about seat belts or helmets for motorcycles or no smoking in public or inside buildings? So, you know, and then you're saying, well, it's a slippery slope and they're leading. I don't know. I think we're going to have to just suck it up for a little while. And as long as business continues, we cannot shut down again. And we're going to need to do something. Maybe it's a half measure to try something. I'd still love to see, you know, and people talk about essential business. Essential business is your business. So I understand a bar owner, to him, that's essential. To the bartender, to the waitress, that's essential. I wish there was a way where we could move our public help to the owners of bars, to be able to pay their employees and be able to pay their own bills. Because to me, that those mass gatherings in that circumstance, as much as I enjoy going to a bar, that's not a good idea right now. And I'm not talking about a pub where people are sitting down outside. I'm talking about the 20-something bars where there are 150 people crammed in an area. And frankly, I'd be more concerned doing that times 10 than going to the Indianapolis 500 with 150,000 people. I think I would come in contact with far fewer people at the Indianapolis 500 than I would just at your typical Broad Ripple or downtown Indianapolis bar on a Saturday night. So there's my stand for a little while, and we can have what it's worth. But bottom line, I think this is a good thing. I think this helps. And what I've said before is I don't want to wear a mask, but if people think it's best, let's just mandate it, and then I don't feel silly, or I don't even have to think about it. I just do it. And if I don't want to do it, I do what I've been doing. I stay home. I stay home, you know, and I wear it when I go to the grocery store, because that's about all I have to do that involves going inside somewhere. So we'll move on to other topics. Marty Snyder's going to join us here in a few minutes to talk about the pairing of NASCAR and IndyCar and answer any NASCAR-related questions we have, because he's paying closer attention than we are. I want to talk about Indy 500 car count in a moment, and then you give me some picks to click this weekend in the Grand Prix for IndyCar. We'll do that in just a moment. Trackside 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
This is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Marty Snyder of NBC joins us in a few minutes to talk NASCAR and IndyCar. They're still drawing for the starting lineup, and Big Machine Hand Sanitizer 400. Is that right, Kurt?
That's right.
Yes? Okay.
Yes.
The lineup is Joey Logano has drawn the pole. Kurt Busch will start second. I think this is his 700th Cup race coming up this weekend. Then Alex Bowman, Jimmy Johnson, Alec Almirola, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr. That's the top eight. in the Cup race. They still are not practicing. They're just going to roll up and race. Xfinity will practice on Friday because it's a new venue. And they, though, also, they're not qualifying, so they drew for that. And Jeb Burton on the pole. I think I saw Austin Cindric drew 10th in the Xfinity race. Our buddy A.J. Allmendinger we had on a couple days ago, 30th. Marty's son, Myatt Snyder, will start 26th. He's pretty good on road courses from his experience in Europe. So we'll talk with Marty about that a little bit. And by the way, the Xfinity practices tomorrow, not on TV, but if you have NBCSN, you can go to the NBC Sports app and watch that for free. I think they practice at 1:30 and 2:25, or 1:30 through 2:25, and then 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. The IndyCar practice tomorrow, Kurt, is
11:30.
I don't have a sheet here. 11:30, and that's on NBC. 11:30 on NBC Sports Gold, and the 9 a.m. warm-up, the same on Gold on Saturday. The qualifying, by the way, is Friday afternoon. That's on TV. So that's the only racing tomorrow on TV, 4:30 on NBCSN. And something else, if you're a sports car fan, so we've talked about the Gold deal that IndyCar has. So they've added that for some of the NASCAR practices and for IMSA and ARCA and some other things as well. They have one called Track Pass. And there are two versions of it. One is all-encompassing for some of the smaller NASCAR divisions and some of their practices as well. And that's different than IndyCars in that you can watch some things live, not races, and you don't need a cable subscription. You can watch IMSA races live. So if you are a cord cutter, there is a way with that Gold package to watch IMSA races live without commercials. And it's like $2 a month. And if that's too much, Michelin just tweeted something a couple of days ago, and I actually took advantage of it because I'm like everybody else. I pay for the Gold subscriptions. Michelin IMSA is the pass to get the sports car side of things. And I think if it includes NASCAR as well, it's something like $5 a month. So that's how you can watch everything else that's going on. Okay, let's talk about the race this weekend. So let's leave out Will Power and Simon Pagenaud. They've split the six previously. Who else are as good a picks as anyone?
Well, you know, you obviously have to start with Scott Dixon. And yet, you know, this is one of those places he hasn't won at, surprisingly. Of course, there have only been six races. You know, so I always like to pick somebody from the first group and then what you might call the second group. Graham Rahal's name always comes up for me in the kind of the second group if Dixon and the three Penske's are the lead group. But I think I always have this feeling that Graham runs pretty well at this road course. So that would be a good pick. But, you know, it's going to be very difficult to pick against those two Penske's in Pagenaud and Power since they've won all six of them. Three by Power, three by Pagenaud. Two of those Pagenaud wins were with Penske. The first one was with Schmidt. But, you know, that's where you'd have to start. You know, it's the same cast of characters, though. I mean, there's probably 10 drivers that could win this race. Down a mm-hmm. little bit from an oval because you wouldn't factor in, you know, Ed Carpenter the way you would on an oval race. It'll be a good show unless one of those two Penske's, you know, do what those two Penske's typically do at Indianapolis.
You know, it's another opening weekend, though, because this is an entirely different race than Texas. So that's why I am so fascinated to watch this play out. What's Connor Daly going to do with Ed Carpenter Racing? Rinus Vicke is looking for a reset, and clearly this is a venue that he has a better chance of having success on than making your debut in IndyCar at Texas Motor Speedway. And going up and down the list, some of Chad 300's tweets, he always comes up with some good stats for us. You mentioned Graham Rahal. He just needs to qualify better, but he's gone 17th to 2nd, 24th to 4th, 20th to 6th, 17th to 9th in his starts. And by the way, it's Chad 200. I gave him an extra 100 in his Twitter handle.
You know,
he had a couple other notes too. Go ahead.
The two guys that I'll be particularly fascinated by are Oliver Askew and Rinus VK. Rinus, I believe, won one of the two Indy Lights races here last year, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think Oliver, he didn't win the other one. I don't remember who won the other one now that I started down this road. But Oliver has had a lot of good runs in the ladder series at this track. So unlike Texas, he ought to, you know, they ought to feel pretty comfortable from the get-go. Now, can they win the race? I don't think so. But and you know who else that you might take a flyer on, and that's Felix Rosenquist. I think Felix would be a really good kind of second-tier pick behind those first, because those first four guys plus Rossi, That'd be where you start most races, but Felix would be somebody that would be very interesting to watch.
Oh, no doubt. And remember, he won the pole last year, and I was already going to say, because I think Felix is going to be in that heavy list as well, but don't be surprised if Marcus Ericsson isn't up there contending in the top five, potentially better depending on how the yellows fall and so forth. He was having a strong run at Texas. He had his moments last year. I think Ganassi's on point this year, and they're going to be very difficult to beat. So those are just some of the few, and I'm leaving out some, and we'll look at a grid and get some more. Chad also had this one. Newgarden's never finished in the top 10 in six starts. I would say he's due. That's not going to continue. You talked about Dixon. He's finished as the runner-up three straight years. Power and Pagenaud have led a combined 250 laps. No other driver has led more than 40 total laps. Now, Pagenaud's first win was not with Penske. So they've won the last five, and courtesy of Russ Thompson, our NBC statistician, the record for most consecutive wins at a track is, you'd care to guess?
At one track, I think it's four.
It's six for a team. Andretti Autosport.
Oh, for a team, I'm sorry.
Did it at Iowa from 2010 to 2015 with four different drivers. Ganassi also won six straight at, you can probably guess this one,
sorry, I was getting ready to answer the Andretti question. Ganassi won six straight at Mid-Ohio.
There you go. That's a good guess, too, with Dixon. And remember, Charlie Kimball won there one year, and Dario probably won in that stretch at some point.
No, Team I think
Penske
they were all
won
Dixon.
The last five here.
I think they were
Charlie
all Dixon.
Charlie won in 2013.
I know. I'm kidding.
Okay. Dixon's won enough to make the streak alone for himself, but he didn't win it every single year. Who else do we think is going to, you know, kind of looking at, especially for the people who do fantasy things, you know, you always are talking about Alexander Rossi, and that's what you got into with the usual suspects. I want to see what Alex Palou does this weekend. I think he's someone that might be a player that you wouldn't talk about a whole lot.
No, I think you're right. He'll be an interesting watch. And, you know, he got robbed at Texas, wrong place, wrong time when VK had his spin. So I really be, you know, rooting for Alex to have, you know, a good, strong, what we will call start to the season, because he didn't really get a chance at Texas, you know, being taken out, I think, lap 34 maybe. It was pretty early in the race, so that would be one. I think Connor will be interesting to watch. I hope he has a good run for that team. It'd be really nice for Carpenter's team, given the trouble they had at Texas, to have VK and Connor Daly deliver, you know, top 10 finishes. That would be really strong. And as you're looking through the list, and I'm going through it in my head, I think we've pretty well identified it. Ryan Hunter-Reay has run pretty well on these types of circuits. He'd be another one, but I think we've named him, and unless there's somebody else.
And there will be someone that we don't expect that, you know, finishes top six or seven, and that's the beauty of IndyCar, is that it's not just lip service, but, you know, there are 20 on the grid every week that have a chance to at least be a real factor in the race. I'm going to try to fly through a few Twitter questions here. From Vincent 1701, what's the biggest unexpected surprise that Penske Corp has done with IMS since the purchase? I don't know if I really have one, because I don't know that he's done anything that's just shocking. I think he's done lots of little things that all add up to a big thing. But they're all things that we talked about, I think, coming in.
So I took my first drive around the property today and saw a lot of the things that are new, and there should be a video here probably tomorrow that will give fans a nice inside look at some of those changes. But the one I've been calling for almost for since it went up in the first place was to backlight the Indianapolis Motor Speedway sign there on the roundabout at 16th and Georgetown. It was just dark. As soon as it got dark, you couldn't read it. And Rogers put lights, backlights on those letters, and you can see it now, and it's unmistakable where you're at. And so that's the one that, you know, as soon as that sign went up a few years ago, I was begging to get lights on it so you could see it.
Chris Wright at Karting Pilot says, should we consider this weekend a true doubleheader if there are no fans in attendance and no crossover drivers? By the way, hello, Chris, former high school baseball teammate. Yeah, it's still a doubleheader. You know, the fans is very unfortunate, but that does not impact the competition part of this. And I didn't expect any crossover drivers. I think it's possible moving forward, but I don't think these events are dependent on having crossover drivers, because it's so difficult for a NASCAR driver to come in, unless they've done this before, like an AJ Allmendinger or somebody like that, to come in and not be last on a road course in an Indy car. And it'd be hard for AJ not to be last on a road course in an Indy car.
I think we'll see it. I think, you know, you look at what Kurt Busch or Kyle Busch could do. If they had a little time to prepare for this, had this been on the schedule, you know, last fall when the schedules were announced, I believe one of those two would have tried it. I wouldn't be surprised if a Newgarden, for example, ended up running the cup race on Sunday in the future. He would be one that he has great interest. You saw on the NBC social media with Lee Diffie this week, Joseph begging publicly just to get in a car and even try it somewhere. He wants to run Bristol. He needs to have his head examined. But, I think he'll run a stock car somewhere sometime, and this would be a great place for him to do it.
I do too. And when he wins the Indy 500, if and when, he'll have a little more leverage and he'll be given a gift to do something like that. I'll ask a driver how hard this would be. You know, it's one thing going to run Daytona in a stock car with a lot of experience. I'm wondering how hard the Brickyard would be for someone without a lot of stock car experience. Okay, we're over time for this segment. You're done. You're back tomorrow night with Greg Ragstraw, right?
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Okay, so I'm off traveling tomorrow. Marty Snyder is going to join us in just a moment. Stay with us. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5, The Fan.
This is Will Power, and you're listening to Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070, The Fan.
The crossover is this weekend. IndyCar and NASCAR together with the Cup Series and IndyCar plus Xfinity. Throw in a road course race with an oval all at the same time. NBC has everything Saturday from noon until 6. And by the way, flip over to NBCSN for the IMSA WeatherTech 240 Saturday night from Daytona sports cars. And then NBC has the Cup race, the Brickyard, on Sunday as well. Marty Snyder is involved in all of those races, and we're going to get him on the cell phone for the sports car race too, so you can just get some of that in there as well. So a pandemic sped this process up. Were we headed in that direction where IndyCar and NASCAR were going to combine a weekend?
Hi, Kevin. Yes, hi, Marty. We were. I think at the end of the day, they were going to make it happen in 2021, no matter what, at least. I should say 2022 at least. I think Mark Miles was quoted as that earlier in the year. But, yeah, I think they were all headed that direction. You know, to me, I mean, I've been doing IndyCar and NASCAR for quite a while now. And I think, you know, when I first started doing IndyCar, there were not a lot of NASCAR people who loved NASCAR in the IndyCar garage. I mean, the drivers did and the competitors did. But, you know, I think for the most part, a lot of folks kind of shunned NASCAR. And I think I've seen that melt over the last few years. You know, now it's sort of like, hey, we all love all motorsports and we all want to see all motorsports. So, yeah, I think I think definitely it was headed this way no matter what, but it took the pandemic to kind of force it along, and certainly happy that it's going to happen this weekend, Indianapolis, July 4th. I mean, it can't get any better than this, in my opinion.
So I've not been in all the meetings for what's happening in Indianapolis, focused on the IMSA side. Give us a tease of anything special coming up on what's, for NBC, just as big of a weekend as it is for IndyCar and NASCAR, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge for us. I mean, the fact that, you know, Mike Tirico is coming this weekend to kind of host everything is just tells you right there. I mean, Mike Tirico is at all the biggest sporting events in the world, from Olympics to Super Bowl to Football Night in America every Sunday. And here he is, you know, our bosses at NBC, Sam Flood and Jeff Binky on the NASCAR side said, hey, this makes sense for Mike to be at this event. And they're right. I mean, it's a huge event for IndyCar and NASCAR to come together and be together on the same track. The one thing that you know, I'm kind of sad about, and I was just talking to Will Power and Joseph Newgarden about this a minute ago, is that they can't really kind of cross-pollinate the garage areas, you know, in the paddocks. That part is interesting and a little bit sad. And it's strictly because of the pandemic, right? You can't risk anyone getting infected. So I can envision this, and I know we'll do this in the future, but you're going to see Kyle Busch and a Kevin Harvick walking around the IndyCar grid, and you're going to see, you know, Will Power and Joseph Newgarden and all these guys walking around the Cup grid. That's going to be fun when that does eventually happen, and I can't wait for that day. And that's the one bad part about it, but just to see everything on the track at the same time with the Xfinity Series going off on Saturday afternoon and a track they'd never been to. I mean, all of this is going to be so cool to take in, and I just can't wait for it.
And beyond the fact that IndyCar is involved, it was already a really neat weekend with Xfinity on the road course and Cup on the oval. I probably know more Xfinity drivers, so I watched that. You know one Xfinity driver really, really well. Mike Snyder's had a strong year. He's running for the championship. Right now he is in playoff position. What do you expect from Myatt? I know he has that extra road course experience from running in Europe last year.
Yeah, well, you know, you sat with me at Starbucks and many times and watched Myatt's race in Europe last year. I'm excited about this weekend. You know, the interesting thing for Myatt, who is obviously my son, for those who don't know, the interesting thing is that, you know, he only has a handful of races in the Richard Childress racing car. I mean, honestly, it wasn't until a month or so ago that we even knew we were going to run the full-time season or all of the races this season. And so we worked that out with Ryan Sieg Racing in the 93 car. It's a very good car. It's not the level of RCR. They know that. Everyone knows that. So when he's in the 21, he has to kind of show what he can do. And so he was leading at Pocono with, I think, up to like 12 to go last week. And, you know, we had older tires on compared to Ross Chastain and Chase Briscoe. So they were able to pass Myatt. But then he put on tires for the green, white checkered and drove from 15th to 4th. So he's done some amazing things in the car. And I've been very impressed with him. And I was texting with Richard Childress after the race Saturday. And he said, man, he has been so good here. As they, you know, kind of have rounded into July here, and just he's been very impressed with them. So what to expect from Myatt this weekend, I have no idea. I don't know how good the Sieg program is in terms of how good their road course car is, and can it compete? Can it run up front? I have no idea if it can run up front. So a lot of question marks behind how they'll be this weekend, but I know he's going to put in a great effort, and I know the extra road course experience. I mean, listen, when you hang out for an entire year with Jacques Villeneuve and you're running at Brands Hatch and running at Hockenheim and places like that, you learn a lot. You pick up a lot. And so I think his road racing skills have certainly developed over the last year.
Watch for Myatt in the number 93 Louisiana Hot Sauce Chevrolet. Chase Briscoe is an Indiana guy. And on one of the other shows, the host was asking me about his options for next year. What options might there be in Cup for someone like Chase Briscoe next year?
You know, it's funny. We talked to Chase about that earlier this week, and he doesn't know what he's going to do. He doesn't have a contract for next year. And he made a very interesting point. He said, I'm not a Stuart Haas driver. I do not have a contract with Stuart Haas Racing. I have a contract with Ford. And he said, okay. So to some people, that may make them go, whoa, wait a minute, you know? But he was saying to our group, he was saying, but to me, that makes me go, that's awesome. I can go to Roush. I could go to Penske. I could go to Front Row. I could go to Stuart Haas in the Cup car. I could do, there's anything I could do, you know? And he said, so I literally have no piece of paper that binds me to Stuart Haas Racing. I'm minded to Ford. And so that gives him a lot of leeway and a lot of options and places he can move. And they certainly could place him in a lot of places. And he doesn't have anything done for next year. But like he said, you know, to us on our call, I helped him or talked to him throughout this whole process last year. He wasn't signed to Stuart Haas or signed to drive an Xfinity car with Ford until January of this year. So I'm glad they stuck with him. I hope there are Cup options for him. I think there certainly will be. You can't leave a young man with that level of talent on the sidelines. And trust me, he wants this one this weekend bad. This is the one race he wants, Indianapolis. And it's kind of funny, you know, he's driving for his hero, Tony Stewart. Now he has his hero's crew chief, Greg Zippadelli, on top of the pit box. So it'd be interesting to see if Zippy can pull off a win and Chase can make it happen this weekend.
Yeah, he says, I'm not real good at road courses, but I was covering that Mid-Ohio race last year for somebody that wasn't very good. He was pretty good, so I wouldn't count him out yeah. this weekend as well.
Exactly.
I know you got a busy weekend. I'll let you go. We'll be watching tomorrow on NBC Sports Digital for the Xfinity stuff. You'll be on actual yep. television for IndyCar at 4:30 on NBCSN, and then all day on Saturday on NBC, and then Sunday afternoon as well. See you soon. Thanks, Marty.
Going to be fun, my friend. Enjoy Daytona.
Thank you. Marty Snyder from NBC. Big weekend. Also, everything is right here on the radio as well, Saturday and Sunday, too. Coming up, well, it's time to talk history. Trackside is complete, but it's time for Donald Davidson and the Talk of Gasoline Alley, 317-239-1070 is the number.